Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, the sun, the surf, and a cold drink with a straw. That's a typical day at the beach. Millions of tourists come here to Florida to enjoy, right? Well, one part of that picture could soon change because some Florida cities are now trying to ban the plastic straw. Senator Kevin Rader is a Democrat from Boca Raton. He wants to ban both plastic straws and plastic bags.
The governor just recently announced a $2.5 billion initiative to clean up our Florida's waterways. And I support that initiative, but part of that must include eliminating an obvious pollutant and danger to our environment, and that's plastic bags and plastic straws.
Yeah, there's a competing bill, though, this week that was approved by a Senate committee in Tallahassee as lawmakers went to work with the official opening of session. That competing bill bans any local ban on plastic straws for at least 5 years as the state studies the issue. Palm Coast Republican Travis Hudson is behind that effort.
I'm just a big proponent that government shouldn't come in and tell a business how to operate, and that the choice should be on the consumers or the business itself if it should choose to go to paper straws, but not be mandated by the local government.
Now, several cities across the state, from Coral Gables to St. Augustine, have banned or are looking at banning plastic items and styrofoam containers at both grocery stores and restaurants. Jason Emmett is president of Duffy's Sports Grill. Duffy's has 34 restaurants across Central and South Florida. He says they now only give out plastic straws upon request.
You know, we first took some initial steps to at least limit our usage of plastic straws, and no longer just giving them automatically. That's the first thing we've done, and just, you know, give them upon request only, so at least we're not just wasting unwanted straws.
So do you support banning plastic items like straws, utensils, and grocery sacks? Have you limited your use, your purchase of them, for instance? The idea of cutting down on single-use plastic in your household and your habits. What's the risk posed to Florida's environment by the use of this kind of plastic? And do you see evidence of the stuff along the shorelines in your neighborhood? 305-995-1800. Plastic, banning plastic, regulating the use of consumer plastic in Florida. 305-995-1800, or you can find us on Twitter, at Florida Roundup is our handle there.
Yeah, tweet us at Florida Roundup as well, including in Tallahassee, where we welcome Station WFSU today to our lineup across the state. Joining us now with their thoughts about all this, we welcome Holly Parker Curry, Florida Regional Manager for the Surfrider Foundation, and Samantha Padgett. She's General Counsel with the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. Holly, let's begin with you. A number of Florida cities have banned or are looking at banning single-use plastics, as they're called, plastic bags, plastic straws. Why is Surfrider Foundation in support of this? Tell us why you are concerned about the use of these plastics and the damage you think they're causing to the environment.
Thanks for having me. So the Surfrider Foundation was founded by, as you may have guessed, surfers, but we represent beachgoers and beach and ocean lovers across the world. And our folks spend a lot of time at the beach and in the water. And one thing that they see everywhere is single-use plastics. It is absolutely impacting their quality of life and their trips to the beach. We do a number of beach cleanups. We do them all year round and across the state and across the country. And at every single beach cleanup we do, we leave with bags and bags of single-use plastics. That includes everything from cigarette butts, which are a form of plastic, to plastic bags, straws, stirrers, bottles, caps. They are everywhere, and they are impacting our environment in really significant and urgent ways.
Samantha Padgett with the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, these kinds of bans, talk of these bans, go directly at some of your stakeholders, certainly in the restaurant and hospitality business. Has the Trade Association taken official position on efforts to ban plastic straws and plastic bags?
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Melissa, for having me on today. We have generally supported the ability of our members to respond to their customers as they see fit. We recently put out a blog on our website talking about request only, that this is a great middle-of-the-road position for our restaurateurs, kind of like you heard Jason with Duffy's talk about, so that the option is there, but it curbs the usage by not making, just putting it out there all the time unless the customer uses it. Regarding plastic bags, those are items that are 100% recyclable, and it's important to note that whatever whatever we use. We've become a more transient and a more to-go society. Mm-hmm. And the most important thing is that whatever material it is used, whether it's paper or plastic, what we support is making sure that there are options to dispose of those items and make sure they're recycled.
So, Samantha, just real quick, just a point of clarification there from the trade group. On straws, what you're saying is you would prefer not to have the state legislature or local regulations, but rather just leave it up to the restaurants and do an education campaign.
What we see our restaurants doing within their communities is voluntarily attacking this issue. So we see restaurants joining with their neighborhood restaurant association to do a ban, or they're joining with their restaurant association to do a request only. We see large corporations addressing mm-hmm. it and going to request only.
But would the trade group approve of the state ban, or in some locations, some cities have banned plastic straws, for instance, from outdoor cafes?
We would not approve of, we don't approve of the local bans and the local ordinances. For the largest reason is that there is no uniformity. So it's very difficult, for example, to take what I call a multi-jurisdictional operator. Mm-hmm. And right now there are at least 30 different ordinances. None of them are exactly alike. And if you're a large restaurant or if you have multiple outlets, it's very difficult to be able to keep up with those and make sure that you are adhering with the requirements and all the specificities of all the different ordinances.
Yeah.
We think that for each restaurant to be able to do it the way that fits well with their business and so they can respond to their customer is really what will allow for a long-lasting change and adaption.
Now, we're looking at nearly 20 municipalities around Florida that have passed mm-hmm. or are close to passing a ban on single-use plastics. Holly Parker Curry with the Surfrider Foundation, let me ask you as a follow-up. This is an idea that has caught fire really around the country and around the world. July of last year, Seattle became, I think, the largest U.S. city to ban plastic straws. The District of Columbia is putting through a ban. Major corporations are phasing out the use of plastic straws. This is all in response to public outcry, consumers demanding action against a product that is seen to be very harmful to the world's oceans. This is a really interesting number. In just the U.S. alone, 500 million straws, it's estimated, are used every single day. That all flows into the ocean, millions of tons of plastic. It disrupts marine life, and it eventually makes its way into the food supply, and we end up eating foods that have those plastic elements in them. Now, all of that said, what do you think about the pushback to the bans here in Florida? Palm Coast Representative Travis Hudson saying, let's not do bans. Let's study this for 5 years. He doesn't like the idea of municipalities taking action locally to ban single-use plastics. What about that move that's likely to be discussed this legislative session in Tallahassee? What's your reaction to that?
Well, to be clear, lots of plastics are not recyclable, and that includes single-use plastic straws. Your single-use plastic bags are recyclable, but they can't go into your mainstream, your city or your county recycling bin. You have to go to a special place to drop them off, and the fact is that those products are largely not recycled. On average, for plastic bags, it's somewhere around 4%. For all plastic overall, it's somewhere about 9%. And a huge percentage of that, somewhere around 79%, ends up in either landfills or the ocean or on our beaches. So that has a really detrimental effect. Our cities and our counties are the folks that see that every single day. And that's why they really feel the urgency to address this. And I think what Samantha couched as a criticism that these are not all the same, we view as a positive. You know, these are not one size fits all. They're crafted to really target that city, that county, that community. And from a Surfrider perspective, our chapters and our volunteers have participated in this process at the local level a lot. And it's largely very deliberative. It involves, you know, both the beach-going community and citizens who are concerned about it, but also businesses. They try to get a lot of buy-in and make this as accommodating and easy a shift as possible. So for us, it's an urgent crisis.
You see it as
an urgent solution.
So then do you feel that the state government telling local governments, in effect, no, we're not going to allow you to take action. We're not going to allow you to institute a ban. Do you see that as government overreach then?
It's hugely problematic because to date in Florida, we were the first state to have a ban on bans for single-use plastic bags. So we've preempted the regulation of plastic bags. We've preempted the regulation of foam foodware, also known commonly as styrofoam. Mm-hmm. And now we're considering preempting straw ordinances. That is a huge government overreach. And unless the state is ready to take drastic action, then they need to leave it in the hands of the local governments who are.
We got a lot of phone calls and tweets. We're going to get to those. But I just want to clear up some confusion here, Samantha, for me. I mean, the plastic bag that I get at a Publix here in South Florida is, I can tell no difference to the plastic bag that I would get up if I was visiting Melissa in Jacksonville. Same for the plastic straw that I may get at a Starbucks on, I-10 versus the straw at a Starbucks on I-75. So why you want to craft local legislation to respond to local needs? Isn't the plastic the same?
Yes, the plastic is the same, and that goes into one of our points is that until you adopt a holistic approach as a state to attack it with a patchwork of regulation really doesn't have a significant impact. Melissa, you highlighted a specific statistic that's oft-quoted, and that is that we use 5 million straws a day. It's interesting to note that is based off the estimation made by an elementary school child when he did a loose review. That is not a scientific statistic. When you look, I've looked at different estimations that a straw is as much as 4% of the plastic waste that exists, or less than 1%.
Well, let me ask you that if that's not an accurate number,
96%.
If that's not an accurate number, then how do we get an accurate number on the amount of plastic waste we're generating as Americans? Because if it's not 5 million a day, where do we get that accurate number? Because the conventional wisdom is that we're generating a lot of plastic.
And I want to specify that, I work for the hospitality industry, for restaurants and hotels. Right. We are as dependent as anyone on a beautiful environment in the state of Florida. If we don't have our beautiful coastlines and our beautiful beaches, how are we attracting people to our state? So I just want to put that out there that we are as an industry as affected by anyone, if not more, by making sure that we have a beautiful environment in Florida. So it is on us to do that. My point is our companies are doing this without government regulation, without interference, without penalties or regulation. They recognize the role that we have to play, and they're embracing that.
We're talking with Samantha Padgett via FaceTime, General Counsel for the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. Also, Holly Parker Curry, Florida Regional Manager for the Surfrider Foundation. We're talking about plastics in Florida, plastic straws, plastic bags, plastic utensils, yes, styrofoam containers as well. Some local governments have taken action on trying to ban some of these. The state government has put a moratorium or is debating a moratorium on local bans to study the issue, at least of plastic straws. 305-995-1800 at Florida Roundup is the Twitter handle. Let's begin the calls in Pompano Beach. Michael is with us on the Florida Roundup. Go ahead, Michael. You're on the radio.
Thank you very much. As I began to look into this, at first, I personally don't use plastic straws, and I quite supported this ban when I heard about it. But hearing more voices, I would hope it would get broadened out beyond what seems to be people who are concerned about the environment versus business. In particular, I've since this became prominent, started reading about people who have, for example, various disabilities, and for them, a straw isn't a convenience. A straw is something that they very much need in their daily lives, and I feel like that's maybe not been as much a part of this conversation as it needs to be, and so I would just hope that we would have that ability to branch out and consider everyone in this.
Sure, Michael, that's a great point. Samantha addressed that from the point of the hospitality side, and I guess I'd like you to perhaps make a distinction between the necessity that some customers have for a straw and the necessity for that straw to be a single-use straw.
In the disability community, they have a phrase that, adapted or assistive technology, and it can be things that are very technologically advanced. In this case, it's something as simple as a plastic straw, and that makes it possible for people to meet their feeding and hydration needs that they can't meet with the alternative materials used for other straws. And that goes into what I was saying about we want to be able to respond to our customers in the best way we know how. We're not as a as a public institution, we're not able to inquire as to someone's level of disability. Mm-hmm. So we can't ask somebody, do you need this, or am I required to give you this paper straw? We need to make that plastic straw available, because in many cases, if you have swallowing issues or if it's a choking hazard, a paper straw or another form of another alternative isn't possible. It isn't usable. It's a hazard. There was a wonderful woman who testified in the Senate committee this week who talked about the necessity for the voices in the disability community in this discussion. And for us, it comes down to our customers. If we can't serve our customers in a way that is safe and hospitable, then we have failed in our role as the hospitality community. And that is a very significant issue to us.
Lots of tweets on this very hot topic. Bill tweets, the Florida Roundup, banning one-time use plastics would be great policy. That some in Tallahassee want to ban local governments from protecting their environment, infrastructure, and tourism industry is ridiculous. But here's another tweet from a listener. I have a cat. I live in a high-rise. Use cat litter that can't be flushed, and it can't be dumped in the trash chute without a bag. What are cat people supposed to throw away their used kitty litter in? And we'll get to that question, too, here on the show. If we're going to ban single-use plastics and bags, people need to know what the alternatives are. If they are going to go to a restaurant, they want to know what else will be used. If you can't use plastic bags anymore at the grocery store, people have to change that habit, too, at some point. And lots of calls here on the Florida Roundup at 305-995-1800. Caitlin is in Jacksonville. Hi, Caitlin. Happy Friday. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I actually am from Jacksonville, Florida myself. So I see right there in front of me at the beach all the trash and everything that floats up onto the beach. I actually love the idea of a plastic ban. I think it's actually very doable considering how many utensils are made nowadays with biodegradable products. I also do think it is basically up to us as individuals to start this process. I know I have stopped using things like Ziploc bags and plastic bags myself, but, you know, and started switching over to maybe like Pyrex glassware,
sure,
things like that.
Yeah, individuals making changes. Yeah, thank you for that, Caitlin. Holly,
exactly.
Quickly before we go to break, Holly Parker Curry with the Surfrider Foundation. Individual consumers can buy products. Restaurants, as Samantha has said, can start to react to that voluntarily. But as we go to break, if we get rid of plastic straws, what are and plastic bags, finding alternatives can be challenging. It's a difficult change for many. Your thoughts quickly about that.
Well, it starts with small incremental changes. Leave some reusable bags in your trunk when you go to the grocery store. Bring your own straw, or just skip the straw when you can. There are really small incremental changes that everyone can make that will make a big difference for our plastic pollution footprint.
Like buying for perhaps a metal straw that you carry around with you. I know some people that do that. For the average consumer, though, that's not a change they're going to make overnight. This is such a hot topic, and we have so many of your calls and tweets. As we continue talking about this here on the Florida Roundup this Friday, we want you to let us know what you think about this as we continue the conversation with Holly Parker Curry. She's with the Surfrider Foundation, Samantha Padgett with the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, and lots of tweets coming into the show. Here's one: behavior and education is the key here. Government bans will always come across as overreach. They're feel-good measures with no real impact. Do you agree with that? Or maybe not. Get on the line now and join us. We're going to continue talking about the pushback against banning plastic straws in Florida here on the Florida Roundup. More to come next. You're coming from Florida Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. So take a quick second. Look down to the cup holder if you're driving. Do you see a straw in that cup? That's what we're talking about, that plastic straw. Maybe the plastic Publix bag or the drugstore bag that you've got sitting in the trunk, for instance. Talking about plastics and the potential of banning some of those plastics at the local level or banning the bans at the state level here on the Florida Roundup. 305-995-1800 is the phone number, at Florida Roundup on Twitter. Holly Parker Curry continues with us. She is with the Florida Regional Manager of Surfrider Foundation. Samantha Padgett also is with us still, General Counsel at the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. One piece of legislation that's making its way toward another committee vote in the weeks ahead is a bill that would ban local bans on public straws while it mandates a five-year study about the impact. Aaron is in Deerfield Beach on line 10. Go ahead, Aaron. You're on the radio.
Hi. So what Samantha Padgett was saying, as a recent environmental scientist graduate with my master's and being involved with these organizations, like a local organization here for Ocean, they're pulling up tons and tons of plastic every day. What she's saying about having this study based off of an elementary school child is completely inaccurate. We have immense amounts of data for years and years showing the effects of plastic. It's, you can see it visually every day. And this idea that we need a five-year study to confirm the negative effects of plastic in the environment is completely unnecessary. We have the evidence. We need a large scale implementation of regulations that would take away this insane amount of plastic we use every day. And a lot of the consumers don't really have the power to choose to not use plastics. Everything we buy is wrapped in plastic. So it really needs to come from some sort of regulatory standpoint. It just needs to be done.
Aaron, we appreciate that. Congratulations on the new degree, for what that's worth. Samantha, would you like to respond to Aaron's point that there's plenty of research already that we know?
There is absolutely research that indicates that we are, that plastic is an issue, and I don't dispute that. I disputed specifically the estimate of 500 million straws being used by Americans a day. I think the estimates, though, we have to be careful not to conflate we have a plastics issue with we have a plastic straw issue. I think those are two very different things. Yes, by going after the individual plastic straw, yes, are you helping incrementally? Perhaps. But there are much larger, much more significant sources of plastic that would be a much better use of our governmental and regulatory efforts.
Such as what? What would you support?
What would I support?
Or what would the association support?
That is not for me to say. Specifically, we're talking about straws, but I mean, the things that I have read indicate that some of the sources are commercial sources of plastic, with people that are conducting business while out in maritime waters. That without a holistic
what does
approach,
that mean? I'm sorry, I don't know what that means. What does that mean?
Commercial fishing, for example.
Okay, so like fishing nets and those types of things?
Fishing nets
you mean?
And things
I
like
see.
That.
Okay.
That there are larger sources of it. To go after the issue by starting with straws without a larger, more comprehensive approach just isn't really going to move the needle. And in doing it, it feels good to ban the straw, but the practical impact is either very small on the plastics issue and also potentially very significant on the consumer.
They do make a smaller overall amount of the plastic in the ocean when you look at studies that have cited the negative impact on our environment and marine life from plastics. They're small. So on the one hand, that's good, and on the other hand, it's really bad. These are small bits of plastic that people often just throw away. They don't think to recycle straws. The ones that do get recycled, though, they often don't make it through the sorter. They end up in landfills. They end up in oceans. But as you said, there is so much plastic floating around that there's a mountain of ways we could begin to step away from the use of single-use plastics. I think the reason this has become such a contentious topic is there's so much disagreement over whether it should be done by voluntary actions that consumers can take or whether a government needs to step in. And, you know, we're getting so many tweets about this and calls on the Florida Roundup. Here's one from Susie. Why can't people just use metal straws? I just purchased a metal reusable straw and I keep it with me all the time. Here's another tweet. The evidence single-use plastics are damaging the environment is beyond question. Supermarkets in Europe have implemented small fees for plastic bags. This action reduced their use by 90%. In Europe, people bring their own reusable bags to the supermarket. Certainly certainly some Americans do that too, not perhaps as many as do overseas. Meanwhile, as we continue discussing this with the Surfrider Foundation and the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, what do you think about this idea that cities in Florida may be told by the legislature, no, you can't enact local bans of plastics? Let's go to Josh in West Palm Beach. He's a surfer. Hi, Josh. So you spend some time in the ocean.
Hey,
how's it going? Good. What are your thoughts?
Well, I can tell you, I'm at the beach all the time, and I'm pulling plastic out of the water while I'm surfing. And, you know, all you have to do is look at a lot of the sargassum we see around. And I see a lot of straws in the sargassum. It gets caught up. And, you know, you've heard the story about the turtle that had the straw stuck up its nose and stuff. And it's definitely an issue. The plastic bags, they break up into smaller particles quite easily. And then you got to worry about microplastics. And when you're in the water, you know, the water's going throughout your nasal cavity and fish and other wildlife. So that's definitely an issue. I think we're much too short-sighted on the small cost that could be passed on to the consumer. It's more of a, you got to look to the future about saving the environment, thinking more about the environment. One caller called in about kitty litter and what to do with their kitty litter. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I, we've actually been using paper bags, and we have no problem. We simply started asking ourselves, what do people do before plastic? And you'll find out there was solutions. People use paper straws. People use paper bags. People composted more. And it keeps your house smelling nicer in our hot weather if you're not putting your food waste in your plastic bag in your house, and you're composting and using paper bags. So, again, there's plenty of solutions. You just have to ask yourself, what do people do before plastic? It wasn't that long ago. And if it's that big of a deal, pass it on to the consumer. They may gripe about it right now, but they'll be much happier when their environment's not destroyed later.
Thanks, Josh. That's Josh in West Palm Beach. Holly Parker-Curry with the Surfrider Foundation. All of a sudden, I was reminded of the famous movie The Graduate, when the older guy says to Dustin Hoffman, "Plastic, son. You need to get into plastics." and you know, decades later, we have seen that our love affair with single-use plastics has a cost. But, you know, as Josh pointed out, many Americans and many overseas have tried to find other options. Let me ask you, though, sometimes people that want to recycle more, they want to use alternatives to plastic, they find that it's not as easy as it looks. Alternatives can often be more expensive, harder to find. And so culturally, we're not set up to walk away from plastics. So what about that challenge to this?
I think actually it's become a lot easier in recent years to be a good steward. You know, reusable water bottles are everywhere. And the same thing with reusable bags and straws. A lot of restaurants in Tallahassee, where I live, sell reusable straws at the counter. So you can, even if you forget yours, you can get an alternative. I think there's been a major push and a lot of growth in that industry, in that sector. And people mm-hmm. realize that this is something they need to take action on now. And they're ready to make changes. I think it's a habit. And you have to develop it. And that's the real challenge, is remembering to bring your bags, remembering mm-hmm. to leave with your water bottle, that sort of thing.
Sure.
But once
changing
you kind
habits.
Of get into the groove, it's tough. It's tough. But it can definitely be done. And, you know, I want to push back a little bit on a statistic that Samantha cited and say, from most research out there, 90% of floating marine debris is plastic. And 80% of plastic in the ocean comes from land-based sources. And that's us. You know, the majority of this is not fishing nets. And that's a problem, certainly. But that's not generally what this is. This is your average single-use plastic that breaks down into a microplastic and lives in our environment and, unfortunately, in us forever.
Let's talk to Georgie in Miami Springs, who has some alternative ideas about how to use those plastic bags that can pile up in our kitchens while we look for ways to recycle them. Georgie, you're on the radio. Thanks for your patience.
Thanks for having me on, Ted. We have a small group here in Miami Springs, and we get friends and people to collect the plastic bags, and we cut them in a special way, loop them, and we crochet them and make them into homeless mats for the homeless, sleeping mats. They're 6 foot long by about 2 feet, 2.5 feet wide. And it takes about 500, 600 bags to make a mat.
Wow. How long does it take to make one?
Oh, well, it depends on how many hours you sit down.
All right, Georgie, thanks for sharing that idea. There you go, plastic bags into sleeping mats to help out homeless folks, perhaps, in your neighborhood. 305-995-1800 at Florida Roundup on Twitter. Melissa?
Give us a call, Florida, including in Tallahassee, new to our station lineup, 305-995-1800. Laura is in Coral Gables. Hey, Laura, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think this is an important issue, but I think that it's down the line in priorities. The major push for governments, especially Coral Gables, where I live, should be to solve the problem of the septic tanks. Get rid of them, put people on the sewer system, and make sure that the water is going to be potable and usable here in South Florida. Because if you don't have that, no tourist is going to come here, no matter how beautiful your beaches are. People are going to be leaving.
You know, Laura, we are going through a septic tank phase out up here in Jacksonville, Duval County as well. And I do think that is also a legitimate issue when you look at clean water being so important for health and the economy. And that is definitely not something to deny. That said, I think we can talk about all of these as part of an overall piece. Samantha Padgett, you know, in Florida, the environment is the economy. So for businesses like restaurants and hotels to thrive, we do have to have a beautiful, clean environment. And so it's interesting to get your perspective from the business side about this, because for business, you're walking a line between wanting tourists to flock here and enjoy the beautiful oceans and beaches. At the same time, that is threatened by water pollution, overuse of plastics. Mm-hmm. It's a difficult line, I think, for businesses to walk as they discuss this. Go ahead, your thoughts.
I think you are absolutely correct. We cannot, in the tourism industry, be profitable unless our state is beautiful, unless we have beautiful beaches and we have a clean environment. That is why people come here. But sometimes where we get tripped up is in the regulation of trying to get there. You've highlighted several instances of businesses and ways they're addressing it themselves, that they as a business, through their own processes, can best address. If they don't address it, they aren't serving their customer, and their customer won't return. But to have government come from outside and mandate it often doesn't really accomplish the goal. Let me give you an example. We had one of our, it's a national company, call us and say, there's been a straw ban in a particular city. We intend to comply, but we have to make sure that we can have a reliable supplier. And they have processes within their company to make sure that they're getting a reliable and reputable supplier of a particular type of straw. They could not comply with a very tight timeline that the city gave. And I talked to the sustainability director for the city and said, we just need an extension. They want to comply. They intend to comply. Can we get an extension? They said no, and they suggested that the company go on Amazon to purchase paper straws. That's not how that works, and that is not a long-term sustainable operational solution. And so what do you think the regulation looks like?
What is a sustainable solution for if paper straws are, if consumers hate paper straws and they can't be encouraged to tote around a metal straw, although some people are starting to do that though, what is the long-term sustainable solution?
I think what's interesting is seeing how different companies with different cultures are addressing the issue. And ultimately, it becomes a market issue. If you want biodegradable utensils and you want to make sure, and you put your money where your values are. And that speaks to companies. And so you'll have some companies that want to use paper straw. I've read of a restaurant that used pasta straws, for example, and or wheat stalk straws. There are a lot of innovative ways that people are looking to address this. There is the good childhood classic way of the Twizzler straw. There's a lot of different ways to go about this, but companies have to find ways that they can do it sustainably for their business model and in a way that, that addresses the concerns and needs of their customer.
I'm afraid if I used a Twizzler straw, I'd be eating the Twizzler before I got to the bottom of my cup.
This
with
is
my
why food. This is a problem, but it's very tasty.
It's a light moment. We have just a couple of quick moments left here, but one caller asking about, if we can't ban different kind of plastic products, what about charging more for those products? I know there's some municipalities here in the United States, the city of Chicago, for instance, that charges an upcharge at grocery stores for plastic bags. Samantha Padgett with the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, what about a surcharge on plastic items?
I just don't think in our current environment in the state of Florida, they're going to respond, our legislature is going to respond well to taxing our consumers and using more of their hard-earned dollars to use these products. And I understand that means that they can make a choice, but do you want to charge a person who with a disability who needs a plastic straw? Do we feel good about charging that person extra to use the straw they need to hydrate themselves?
Here's a tweet. We need to wake up and realize that the economy of convenience will soon be incredibly inconvenient. This is a crisis in the making. A ban on any action is a discouraging setback when we need to move forward. Holly Parker Curry with the Surfrider Foundation. As we go to break, will Surfrider lobby against this idea of a ban on the bans?
Absolutely. We've fought this for a number of years, and I think the comment on septic is actually really analogous because that our water quality woes in Florida right now, our blue-green algae, our red tide, that's a failure to regulate. The state has failed to regulate our water quality because they didn't put a value that was high enough on it. And this is exactly the same thing. There are times when we have to take regulatory action because the crisis demands it. And that's exactly what we're experiencing right now. It's a crisis. Anyone who goes to the beach sees the impact of single-use plastics. And Florida, to date, has tied the hands of local governments and Floridians and given us absolutely no option to stem this tide. So we'll fight it tooth and nail, and I'm hopeful that we can stop it.
Now, I know most, in fact, all of our discussion has been really focused on plastics. There's a separate but related issue around styrofoam and those kinds of takeout carriers. We'll leave that for another program, though. Holly Parker Curry, the Florida Regional Manager at Surfrider Foundation from our sister station in Tallahassee, WFSU, and Samantha Padgett, General Counsel of the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, with us via FaceTime. Ladies, thanks so much for joining us here on the Florida Round. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We've got a lot to come, including an update on Hurricane Michael as spring break time begins in the Panhandle. That is next on the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks again for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, spring break time is here when people descend on Florida for a little sun and surf, of course. But it will be a little different this season in parts of the Panhandle, Tom. Of course, Hurricane Michael devastated parts of the Lost Coast, as it's called, several months ago, especially the area around tourism magnet Panama City Beach.
Yeah, the rebuilding and renovation efforts certainly continue this many months after the storm. Just this week, in fact, lawmakers began considering a $315 million aid package for the area. The state already has spent more than $1 billion on cleanup and recovery. The storm caused close to $3 billion in damages, though, and thousands in the area are still homeless.
What a long road it's been for the Panhandle after Michael. We've focused on this regularly here on the Florida Roundup, and now that spring break is here, we want to check in again as we welcome Jessica Foster, a reporter with WJHG-TV in the Panhandle. She's on the line. Jessica, thanks for being with us. And normally this time of year, spring break is lots of excitement in your part of the state. Certainly tourists will come this year, but there's a shadow hanging over the business in the aftermath of Michael. Can you set the scene for us? What are things like there right now as the businesses gear up for spring break?
So there is a shadow over it right now. We've actually talked with several business owners, and they said that they've seen a smaller amount of spring breakers than they normally see this time of year. What we do typically see is the northern schools coming down this time of the year, and then things start picking up as Alabama and Georgia schools have their spring break. So we should see that in the coming weeks, but by what we're seeing so far, it is a lower turnout than what we've seen in the past.
Jessica, can the community handle a normal spring break this year? Are there enough hotel rooms that aren't being taken up by folks that lost their homes in the storm and other rescuer and rehabilitation, renovation, recovery folks?
So, you know, that is the big question. And we've actually had some residents who have been displaced and they've been in condos and they've actually been asked to leave because those condos were booked prior for spring break in the summer season. So now we have residents again looking for places to go again. So it's very different than it has been in the past. Two clubs, I'm sure that people who've been to spring break at Panama City Beach have heard of before, Spinnaker and Club La Vila. They are actually both closed. Spinnaker is rebranding itself and Club La Vila is closed for spring break because they're repairing damage caused by Michael. So those are two hot spots that you would normally see during the college spring break that aren't even open this year.
It's impossible to overstate tourism's importance to this part of Florida. Certainly, it's important to the whole state. But in Bay County, for example, it's the main economic driver, $2.7 billion a year in economic impact. And so for tourism officials, both the local and Visit Florida officials, what's the challenge for them as they try to shore up this sector this year while the recovery effort is still going on? That's a marketing challenge, I would think. At the same time, Visit Florida has issued emergency grants to help local tourism development boards that have been challenged so much by Michael. I would think they've got a tough road of it this year. They've got to try to attract as many visitors as they can under these tough conditions, these challenging conditions.
It really is a balancing act. And I think the message that they're trying to get out there is that much of Panama City Beach is open. And much of our coastline in Panama City Beach wasn't touched. It's more the other areas to the east. So Mexico Beach, of course, we know how devastated that area is. But Panama City Beach as a whole is up, running like nothing ever happened. Now, if you go on into the city, into Panama City, Callaway, Parker, those areas, much of them look very similar to how they did right when the hurricane came through. So it's a long road. It really is.
So Jessica, I'm curious, you know, with that kind of being the reality, and as you mentioned, expectations are perhaps for fewer spring breakers in the Panama City area for various reasons. Is that going to hurt the recovery efforts because you're just not going to get that kind of hotel, motel bed tax revenue coming in that normally the area would experience in March and April?
Well, that is one of our concerns. So we do not want to lose that revenue. But we have also had a lot of our hotel rooms taken up by people who are coming into the area for recovery. So contractors, workers. So we've had a pretty good capacity so far. What we have talked to Walton County about, though, you know, they're just to the west of us. Walton County was not touched at all by Hurricane Michael. They actually saw an increase in their tourism numbers in January.
Let me ask you about Mexico Beach, which really was absolutely flattened by Michael. There was a 90-day moratorium on building permits for new construction projects. That got lifted last month. And so as the rebuilding effort proceeds apace, certainly there is work for people that are coming in, doing new construction. That moratorium being lifted is helpful. Can you share a little bit about the progress in Mexico Beach?
So in Mexico Beach, they are still cleaning up much of that area. And what we have seen is a lot of residents are still waiting to hear about insurance? And can they build back in the same location that they were in before? So there's a lot of delays as far as that is concerned. So I don't think that we're seeing as much movement as we would like to see. But at the same time, residents of Mexico Beach, they're saying, you know, we don't want this to be rebuilt in a capacity that's very commercialized. So they want to keep that feel that they had before. So, but where's that money going to come from?
Yeah, indeed. Jessica Foster is a reporter with WJHG Television in the Panhandle. We're talking about Hurricane Michael, spring break beginning to come into the Panhandle area, certainly. You are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Jessica, let me ask you about the state aid package that's being debated now in Tallahassee, $315 million. You just mentioned that many folks are still waiting for insurance settlements, and it clearly is impacting the rebuilding efforts. This state aid package that is being debated, where would that money go if lawmakers approve it?
Well, one of the things Senator George Gaynor said, the main problem is that the legislation is trying to address the fact that many local governments have lost nearly a quarter of their tax base post-storm.
From the structures that have been destroyed, and so the assessments would be much lower.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So they're trying to keep those counties from going into debt so that they can borrow some money until they can access some FEMA money. So...
And so as that proceeds, as they hope to get those relief funds, how can Floridians best support the Panhandle? I would think one way would be to take a vacation there, just go spend some money there. But charitable efforts proceed as well, national and local recovery efforts. Can you take us through some of the ways people listening can support those who have been most affected by the aftermath of Hurricane Michael? It's been several months now, still thousands homeless in the area, businesses and people struggling. How can Florida support you? How can Florida support this region of the state?
Yes, definitely visiting the area, especially the Panama City Beach area that wasn't impacted by the storm, and spending money because tourism is a large part of our economy, but also talking with your elected officials and letting them know that we still need help so that this can be on their radar. We actually had a group of women, and they are not elected officials, nonpartisan, and they have formed a group called Michael's Angels. And they are going out to elected officials and saying, here, this is what we're seeing. This is what we're up against. I think a lot of people have forgotten about it, or they don't realize the impact. So they're trying to keep it in the forefront of everyone's mind. And they've made an impact already. Just this group of women coming together, trying to shed light on what we're experiencing here in the Panhandle.
Jessica,
will they be going to Tallahassee to lobby during the session?
And they already have been.
They
yes.
already have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not surprising, Tom. With so many items competing for legislators' attention, you've got to get right in their face remind them.
Yeah, and that's what I was wondering from Jessica's standpoint. You know, this legislative session is just 60 days long. They have to pass a budget. Education is an enormous issue. Healthcare is an enormous issue. So, you know, what are you hearing from local legislators about continuing to beat the drum about Hurricane Michael in the Panhandle and having the state resources to rebuild?
They are optimistic about it. And we saw a lot of optimism from Senator George Gaynor just yesterday, and he felt like we were making some headway. Of course, our new governor, he has made many trips here to the Panhandle, and he keeps saying, you know, I'm going to support you. You're going to come back. In fact, Casey DeSantis, the First Lady of Florida, came just this week, and she said that she wanted the rebuilding of the Panhandle and hurricane recovery to be one of her main focuses as well. So we're optimistic about that.
I know there was some criticism about feeling forgotten in the months after the storm. Do you still feel that way in the local community, Jessica?
A lot of our residents do still feel that way, I think, because there's a lot of things up in the air right now. You know, we haven't seen that money allocated just yet. There's talks of it. I think once we actually see the money and start seeing a light at the end of the tunnel, maybe people won't feel so forgotten. But I think in the national news cycle, so much happened. You know, it was right around election time. And
we can't control what the national media does, but we can certainly keep reminding people in Florida, Jessica, and that's our show, The Florida Roundup, produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Alex Gonzalez and Heather Schatz are producers.
Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming and our Technical Director. WLRN's Director of Radio Operations is Peter Meritz. Our theme music provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back next Friday. Have a great weekend.